So we'll have to make it super exciting so that we can... Okay, so let's just do a quick review. We were holding in the middle of doing an internet business on Shabbos, which means if I own a store and I would like to keep my website open on Shabbos, so we were discussing different issues revolving or keeping my website open on Shabbos. May I do it or may I not? So one of the issues we discussed was, is there an iser of shvisas kelev on Shabbos or not? Which really finds itself in the Gemara in Shabbos, daf yud zayin amud aleph, is a machlokes b'shamay and b'shilo. Whether Adam is mitzuveh al shvisas kelev or not. That's the question. So we paskin like b'shilo that ein Adam mitzuveh al shvisas kelev. A person does not have to make sure his kelim do not do any malacha on Shabbos, and therefore it would seem that since the halacha is very clear in Shulchan Aruch and Siman Reish Nun Beis and Arachayim, like Beis Hillel, that there is no mitzvah shvisas kelev on Shabbos, therefore a person, as far as that is concerned, should be allowed to keep his website open on Shabbos. Now, when we look a little bit more carefully into that din in Shabbos Daf Yud Zayin, we'll see that this might not be so simple. Why? Because the Gemara's examples there are, I may start a sprinkler system on Friday and let it continue going into Shabbos. Or I'm allowed to start putting my shirt into a big bowl of dye and let it really soak in the dye over Shabbos. That is permissible if I started on Erev Shabbos and it just continues into Shabbos itself. That's the simple understanding, and therefore if I started some sort of system over here and my kelim are just going on autopilot, that would be mutter. Therefore the Shmir Shabbos Kolchasa writes, if I would like to send a fax from America to Israel on Shabbos, that's permissible. Because he says, the person in Israel doesn't have to make sure his fax machine doesn't do work on Shabbos. And therefore he says, based on this Gemara, that I would be allowed to send the fax from America to Israel, or from Israel to America, and email the same thing. I would be allowed to do that on Shabbos. However, there are those who point out that this is not so simple, because the Rambam, in the later Kisveya that they found of the Rambam on Masechta Shabbos, not on the Pirush HaMishnayis, and the Pirush on the Gemara, so they printed a Ksav Yad, an old manuscript from the Rambam, on his Pirush on Masechta Shabbos, and the Rambam said no. The only time Beis Hillel allows one to do this is if the Pe'ula started on Erev Shabbos. If everything began on Erev Shabbos, for example, I open the sprinkler system before Shabbos, I turn on the hose, and now over Shabbos it's going to keep going as I started on Erev Shabbos. That's permissible. However, says the Rambam, Beis Hillel is going to agree that if I set up a system before Shabbos that's only going to begin on Shabbos itself, it's not that it started now and it's just continuing. It's something that's only going to begin once Shabbos starts. He says even Beis Hillel would say that that is not permissible. And therefore, there are many who feel that based on this Rambam, a person is not allowed to leave a Shabbos clock running over Shabbos. Why? Because everything begins on Shabbos itself. It doesn't start from before and continue into Shabbos. Everything begins on Shabbos itself. So that was the question that we had in Rav Moshe. When we look at our Chaim Chelek Dalet, Rav Moshe writes in Negris Moshe that really a person should be machmir and not use a Shabbos clock on Shabbos for this very reason. Okay, so that's a question. So that was one issue we discussed about leaving on an internet site on Shabbos, whether there's an iser of shvisas kelev. But let's assume that that's mutter. Many of us are makel, not like Rav Moshe, and we use Shabbos clocks, and we assume that there's no iser of shvisas kelev. So let's go to the next issue. What other possibilities can we have of a problem that could face us leaving on a website on Shabbos? So we got into the issue of Schar Shabbos, which was, on a simple face value, that a person is not allowed to make money, he's not allowed to be marviach, any money on Shabbos. So the Gemara Bav Metzia Daf Nunches tells us, Hasocher, someone asks a person, he hires someone to watch Lishmeras HaPara, Lishmeras HaTino. A person hires someone, the simple understanding of the Gemara, not like Rashi, the simple understanding is, that I hire someone to watch my fields, to watch my children, to babysit. So says the Gemara, since I'm not allowed to pay him on Shabbos, therefore he does not have to watch on Shabbos either. I leave him, I ask him, I pay him to be my babysitter over Shabbos. Since he's not allowed to make money for working on Shabbos, therefore he also doesn't have to do his part of the deal and watch my children at all. That's what the Gemara says. However, if I hire him for a week or a month or for Friday and Shabbos, so then the Gemara says, then I'm allowed to pay him for both days together, and then he would have to work for Shabbos as well, which obviously comes to a question. Every caterer has the Shaila. How do I ever pay a waiter who's working for me only on Shabbos to serve the meals and to cater and to clean the dishes? How am I allowed to pay a Jewish person to work for me in a catering business which only works on Shabbos? Let's assume there's no Malava Malka. if there's a Friday buffet or there's a Malava Malka as well, so then I could say that I'm paying him for the package deal and Shabbos happens to be involved in that deal. But what do I do in a case where all I'm serving is the three meals on Shabbos? So many discuss this problem, and they write that the only reason why that there are several explanations given. One is that in Shulchan Aruch, the Magen Avraham points out that it seems that any time it's litzorach mitzvah, any time I'm doing this for a specific mitzvah, then it's allowed. There's no iser of schar Shabbos when it's litzorach mitzvah. So therefore, serving beautiful meals and catering a beautiful simcha on Shabbos, that might be litzorach mitzvah. So that's what some people say. Others say that the answer is that since they have to come a few hours before Shabbos to help set up the whole room, move all the tables and chairs, and put out all the silverware and all the dishes and clean everything and do everything that they need to do, and after Shabbos they're going to have to stay to clean up the whole room and set it back up and put away all the dishes, so I'm also paying them for the work they're doing on Shabbos along with the payment they're getting for working on Friday and on Matzah Shabbos. So that's another one of the answers that is given about how we are allowed to hire people to work for us on Shabbos. The Noda Yehuda writes, what do we do about a person who has to use the mikvah on Shabbos? So he said, someone sent him a shayla, how am I allowed to pay the mikvah after Shabbos? How am I allowed to pay them? That's called schar Shabbos. The mikvah is making money because I'm using it on Shabbos. Let's say I don't use it any other day of the week. So I pay the mikvah some sort of fee. So how am I allowed to do that? How's the mikvah allowed to use the money? So the Noda Yehuda writes, he feels that there's a different reason why we should be making. He says, if I go to someone's house, let's say I run out of eggs on Shabbos, hard-boiled eggs, I don't have any, and I love hard-boiled eggs, and I know that my neighbor has. So I'm going to knock on the door, I say, I need 6 hard-boiled eggs, can I have some? Sure. What are you going to say? I took 6 hard-boiled eggs from him on Shabbos, so there's an Isser Schar Shabbos, so I shouldn't pay him after Shabbos for it? Of course I should pay him. What's the Shiloh? So Noda Yehuda says, what it means is that when I take something be'en from someone, when I take something tangible from someone else on Shabbos, of course I'm allowed to pay them for that tangible item. Why? So he says as follows. Let's say the mikvah. They spend so much time going out to buy, in those days, the Noda Yehuda was writing, to go and buy the fuel and the logs and to speak to the electric company to have the building open and whatever it is to keep the maintenance of the mikvah open, to keep everything going. They spend the whole week doing that. They spend so much time making sure that the tangible part of the mikvah is actually in service. So therefore, when I pay the fee, the $20 fee for using the mikvah, I'm paying for the logs, I'm paying for the lights, I'm paying for the heating system, whatever they have. So I need to pay for something be'en, which I took. The same way I would have to pay my neighbor for borrowing 6 eggs on Shabbos, so do I have to pay the mikvah for using their items on Shabbos. And therefore, the Noda Yehuda writes that any time where it's a situation like that, I would be allowed to, number one, give the money, and number two, the receiver is allowed to use that money as well. And this is what the Marashag writes about. It's interesting. In the 70s, I think, this shuva was written of the Marashag and other Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael at the time about having a vending machine in Yerushalayim on Shabbos. Interesting shayla. So the reason why the shayla came up in the 70s was not because of the vending machine. It was because Bank Mizrahi wanted to put ATM machines all over the city. So they wanted to know, are we allowed to put an ATM in the middle of Yerushalayim, where the only people that are going to use it are going to be Jews? Is that called Schar Shabbos? Because we make money every time someone takes out money on Shabbos. So the Marashag wrote that no, of course there's no Isser. There might be other problems, which we'll get into in a minute, but as far as this issue of Schar Shabbos, that would not be applicable. Why? Because he says, you're paying, number one, to rent a space in the middle of the street to put down your ATM machine. Number two, you're paying the electricity bill to keep the lights on the whole time. Number three, you're paying to have upkeep of the service the whole week. So, putting all that together, this person is actually receiving services from me. And for that, says the Marashag, that we can rely on the Noda Yehuda, that when a person is actually receiving something tangible, or he's getting some sort of service from me, even though it might be on Shabbos, we are allowed to use that money which we gain from the purchase over Shabbos. So that's with regard to the issue of Schar Shabbos. It would seem that if I would like to run my website over Shabbos, and I'm concerned about making money from Shabbos, that issue might not be such a problem. So now let's go to the last problem, which is the issue of Lifnei Iver. And we'll discuss over here, maybe this week, maybe next week a little bit as well, what the parameters of the Isser Lifnei Iver are, and whether this might be an issue when it comes to running a website on Shabbos or not. So the sugya of Lifnei Iver starts as follows. If we look in the Sefer HaChinuch, which is the first of the Ma'amar Komos on the source sheet, let's read it together. Mitzvah Reish Lamed Beis. He says as follows. The Isser Lifnei Iver, the Sefer HaChinuch, always puts in perspective the simple understanding of all the mitzvahs. That's the way he starts off every mitzvah by itself. He first sets up exactly what the parameters of that mitzvah are, and then he writes what the background of the mitzvah is, what the idea might be behind it. So we're going to look at this over here. What does he say about the Isser of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Michshol? So the simple understanding of the pasuk, I would have said, the first line I would have written about Lifnei Iver is what? The simple pshat in the pasuk. I may not put something in front of a blind man while he's walking on the street. That's the simplest thing I would have said if I was writing the Sefer HaChinuch. So if we look carefully, we'll see the Sefer HaChinuch does not say that. He says as follows. The Isser is l'hachshil b'nei Yisrael. I am not allowed to trip up another Jew. L'aseis lahem etzara. I'm not allowed to trip up another Jew and give him some advice that I know is not in his favor. I'm not allowed to give him advice that I know is going to hurt him. Aval niyasher osam kishayishalo etza. When a person comes to me and he asks for some sort of advice, we should straighten them out. We should actually tell them an answer that we know is going to be beneficial to them. We are not allowed to do that. What does it mean? In front of someone who is blind in this area, meaning what? I don't know real estate. I'm the first one to say I don't know real estate. So I think you're the real estate mogul, so I'm going to go ask you what I should do about this type of real estate that I would like to purchase. So in such a case, if you specifically trick me into doing that, I'm a sumavadavar. I don't know the first thing about real estate. So if you go ahead and trick me into doing something because you know I'm lacking in this area, that is what the Sefer HaChinuch writes is the simple understanding of this pasuk. That's what he says. You should never convince someone to sell his field and buy an animal with the money that he gets from the field. The reason why I'm telling you to sell the field is because I happen to be in real estate and I know that buying a field is much smarter than buying an animal. So I convince you to sell your field in order that I should jump on it the next day and buy it. Says the Sefer HaChinuch. Number two, the aspect number two of Lav of Lifnei Iver is Misha Yazer over Aver, someone who helps a person who wants to be over an Aver. Meaning what? The person cannot do this Aver on his own, and I'm helping to facilitate this Aver to happen. I'm facilitating him to do this Aveira more frequently. It's very interesting. We know I'm not allowed to lend money with ribbis. I'm not allowed to give someone a loan with interest. So what's the halacha if I want to borrow money from someone who's giving it to me beribbis? So that guy doesn't care about the Isra of the Torah. So he's ready to lend me the money with interest. Is there a problem for me to take the loan? I would have said, if he doesn't care, so why is it my issue? He's going to lend out the money anyway. So says the Sefer HaChinuch, quoting the Gemara Bava Metzia Daf Ayin Hey, it's an Isra on both of them. Number one, it's an Isra on the person who's giving out the loan with interest, because that's what the Torah says, you're not allowed to take ribbis. Number two, it's an Isra on the person receiving the money, because I'm facilitating him to violate the Isra. So therefore, says the Gemara Bava Metzia Daf Ayin Hey, I'm not allowed to do that either. Uvesof Divrei HaChinuch, the Chinuch writes, this Isser applies to men and women all the time in all situations. If a person actually transgresses this Avera and he gives someone an Eitza which is not proper to him, or he trips someone up in an Avera, if I give a cup of wine to a Nazir who I know may not drink wine, I'm doing a terrible Aveira, I'm going against God's will. Bein lokin alav. However, he qualifies the statement and he says, I do not get Malkus if I do this Isser of Lifnei Iver. Why Lefisha Ein Bo Maisa? We know that the Gemara says, in order to get Malkus, I have to do something which is Yesh Bo Maisa. I have to do a lav which has some sort of activity. The only time the Bezdin can be Mechayiv someone Malkus, the only time they can hit someone is if he violates something which has an activity involved in it. So over here he says, this is a lav she'ein bo maisa. And the Minchas Chinuch picks up right away and he says, why is this a lav she'ein bo maisa? What does that mean? The Gemara tells us, Hamoshe kos yayin l'nazir. If I give, I'm facilitating an Isser by walking up to a Nazir who I know he's not allowed to drink wine, and I'm throwing a cup of wine in his face. That's a maisa. I'm doing an activity. I'm facilitating an Isser with my own hands. And if you look in this Teichamet, he has a beautiful Arichas and Chelek Gimel. He talks at length about this, and he asks a whole bunch of questions. He says, take for example, the Chinuch himself writes, by Bayra Bayimotze, if a person, generally how am I over Bayra Bayimotze? A person leaves Chametz in his house over Pesach, he's over on the Isser Bayra Bayimotze. It's an Isser Darais. Now, says the Chinuch, that even though generally the way to transgress this Isser of Bayra Bayimotze is passively, just by leaving the chametz in my house, says the Chinuch, if a person was avar v'kana chametz, if a person went out of his way, and on Pesach he goes to the store and he buys a box of Cheerios, says the Chinuch, you'll get malchus for that. So the Stechemen asks that this seems to be very problematic, because over here the Chinuch writes, this is considered lav she'ein bo maisa, because most of the times I'm not going to be doing any sort of activity, and even though you're going to find me a case where you are doing an activity, for example, giving a kos of yayin to a nazir, still, we consider a lav she'ein bo maisa. So if that's true, so what's with Bayra Bayimotze? The normal way to be over Bayra Bayimotze is to just be passive and not do anything. So how come if I go out to the store and I buy a box of Cheerios, why is that considered an aveira? Why do I get malchus? That's also a lav she'ein bo maisa. That's the Stechemetz kasha. And he quotes also Magen Mishnah that he gives another example. He says, let's say there's an iser losachsum sharbadisha. There's an iser when my animal is grazing in the field and he's doing work for me, I'm not allowed to cover over the animal's mouth and stop him and prevent the animal from grazing while it's doing the work. So he says, the Magen Mishnah writes as follows. Let's say you have a case where a person doesn't actually put a muzzle over his animal's mouth. He just screams at the animal. Chasma b'kol. He screams at the animal, and the animal right away knows when the owner screams at it that it's not allowed to eat anything. So what's the halach in such a case? What would you have said? It's a lav she'ein bo maisa. He didn't do anything. Says the Magen Mishnah, no, he gets malchus. So what's going on here? How do we draw the line? It's very hard to distinguish when you do get malchus, when you don't get malchus, what's considered an activity, what's not considered an activity, and the Stechemed works very hard to explain what the exact parameters are. And he quotes a note of Yehuda that he says, maybe you can say over there by chasma b'kol, that since I'm screaming at it, maybe that's more of an activity than just being passive. But he says it's not really sufficient. So the Stechemed in the end of his seven-page arichas, whatever it is, he has a beautiful pshat that he writes as follows. He says, we have to categorize the lavim. We have to categorize every mitzvah in the Torah. It has to fall under a category. Is this a lav sheyesh bo maisa? Is this something which generally the Torah meant is to be transgressed with an activity? Or is this a lav sheyein bo maisa? How do we put it in categorically? How do we split it up? That's what the Stechemed writes. And that's how we're going to draw the line between all the different Yisurim. What did the Torah mean? Be'ikaron. In the point of the matter, what did the Torah mean when it said X, Y, and Z Isur? Did it mean that it's considered generally a lav sheyesh bo maisa? Or do we say that it's categorically a lav she'ein bo maisa? That's what he says. So if we look as follows, he says, why does the Sefer HaChinuch write that by the lav of lifnei iver, even if a person does an activity, he does not get malchus? Why? Because he says the category of lifnei iver was a lav she'ein bo maisa. The way the Rambam categorizes it, it's something which generally, 99.9% of the times, being over lifnei iver means giving someone bad advice, telling him the wrong thing to do. I'm not actually handing something in his hand, even though 1% of the times I am actually doing an activity. He says that the category it would fall under is a lav she'ein bo maisa. And therefore he says that even in a case where you find a person doing an activity, it's not going to warrant malchus at all. What about chametz? So he thinks that the category of chametz is something which could be categorized in both. He said there are some times where it's not clear what the Torah meant. Sometimes the Torah meant both of these are equal. It's equally as easy to be over the Isser Bayra Bayimotze by leaving chametz in my house than by going to the store. That's what the Stechemed writes. He says that you have to know the category, how the Sifrei HaMitzvahs, how the Moni HaMitzvahs actually categorize everything, but that's the way he wants to say that. There's three separate categories. There's sometimes where the main point of the Torah was that this is to be violated only with doing some activity. There's sometimes where the Torah says this is to be violated passively, and there are sometimes where the Torah says they can be violated generally by most normal people in two ways. So therefore that would fall under both categories. That's what he says. However, if you look in the Rambam, in the Sefer HaMitzvos, Sharash Tes, the Rambam himself writes that a different reason why one who does the Isser of Lifnei Iver doesn't get Malchus. And he says that the reason one wouldn't get Malchus for Lifnei Iver is because it's a Lav Shebechlalos, which means that the only time I get Malchus is when this Lav is said by itself. Take, for example, number 2 on the source sheet. We're looking at a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Samach Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara says, Minayin le'ochel min abehema. How do I know if I take a bite out of an animal? Kodim shetetze nafsha. I take a bite out of this animal before the animal actually dies. Meaning what? I shefted it, but it's still jumping around. It's not actually dead yet. Shehu b'lo sase. How do I know that I violate a lo sase if I take a bite out of the animal before it dies? Tam lomar lo sochlu al hadam. The Gemara says, this we learn from the pasuk, lo sochlu al hadam. So keep that on your radar. That's drasha number 1. Let's go a little further. Davar acher, lo sochlu al hadam. Losochlu basar va'adayin dam b'mizrach. That's drasha number 2. I'm not allowed to eat meat while the dam is still b'mizrach, while the dam is still there and wasn't taken care of yet. Number 3, Rav Dosi Omer Minayin She'im Avinah Haruge Bezdin. Totally separate din that we learn from this pasuk. How do I know, even though there's a regular din, when a person passes away, we make for the Avelim a Sudas Havra, the neighbors put together a whole meal for him when he comes back from the funeral. So how do we know that when a person gets killed through Misas Bezdin, how do we know that we don't plan a Sudas Havra, we don't put together this special meal for those relatives of the person who just got killed by the Bezdin? Tam Lomar, the Sokol Al Hadam. We should not eat Al Hadam. When Bezdin kills someone, we shouldn't put together the Sudas Havra. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Minayin Sanhedrin Shehargu HaSanefesh. How do we know that a Bezdin who actually went ahead and had to kill someone, Shein Tomim Klum Kolos HaYom, how do we know that they're not allowed to eat the whole day, they have to fast? Which the Gemara actually points out, parenthetically, the Gemara says that because of this reason, since we don't want the Rabbanim to have to fast all day, they wouldn't carry out the Mises Bezin until later in the day, so that they were able to eat until then, and then they would say, oh, now we're going to kill someone, so from that time on, till Shkia, then they wouldn't eat. But we didn't want the Bezin to have to fast the whole day long, so therefore they would only carry out the Mises Bezin later in the day. So how do we know that? How do we know that Bezin's not allowed to eat the whole day? Tamul Omar, also from this pasuk, Losochel al Adam. And number 5 says the Gemara, Azhar le ben Sora Mar Minayin. How do I know that a ben Sora Mar is not allowed to do what he does? Tamul Omar, Losochel al Adam. Also learned from this pasuk. Now, here's the punchline, says the Gemara. If you look at the end of this line, Al Kulam Ein Aloket. If I violate any of these Isurim, I will not get Malchus, Mishum, Dehavilei, Lav Shebechlalos. Because these are all considered a Lav Shebechlalos, which means that if something is not the simple understanding of a pasuk, and from this pasuk we learn many different interpretations, many different isurim, one would not be subject to malchus on such an aver. That's what the Gemara teaches us in Sanhedrin, Daf Samach Gimel. And therefore, when we think about it over here by Lifnei Iver, the simple understanding of the pasuk, as the Chinuch points out, is number 1, I may not give a person advice which I know is harmful to him, and number 2, I may not facilitate him to do an aver. So when I think about it, it's 2 separate drushas coming out of 1 line in a pasuk of Lifnei Iver, Lo Sitein Michshol. So therefore, says the Rambam, that's why I would say that this would not get Malchus, because it's a Lav Shebechlalos. It's not a singular Isser. It's interesting that the Gemara also darshans in Brachos from this pasuk of Lo Sochlu Al Adam, another drusha, Lo Sochlu Kodem Shetispalalu Al Dimchem. A person is not allowed to eat before he goes to daven. If he gets up in the morning, so tea and coffee is obviously different, but a person is not allowed to sit down to a real meal before he goes to daven in the morning. That's what the Gemara tells us. So the Meiri in Bab Metzia Daf Kuf Tezvav, he points out an interesting thing. He says, how can the Gemara learn in Brachos that Lo Sochlu Al Adam means a person is not allowed to eat before he goes to daven? And we learn it from this pasuk, Lo Sochlu Al Adam, and the Gemara says, Lo Sochlu Kodem Shetispalalu Al Dimchem. Person should not eat before he prays for his own dam, for his own well-being. So the Meiri points out, he says, we all know there's a machlokes, the Rambam and the Ramban, whether davening every day is derais or derabanan. So he says, if you assume that davening is only a mitzvah in derabanan, so how does the Gemara say, lo sochel al adam means, I'm not allowed to eat before I go daven? How do we learn that from a pasuk? The whole mitzvah to daven is only midrabanan. That's what the Meiri points out. So therefore he says, that has to be that this refers to not eating before I say Kriyashma. Kriyashma Zachiv Daraisa. So he says, I'm backed in the corner. I have to say that it must mean Losochlu Kodem Shadispalu Al Dimchem. It doesn't mean like I would have understood that I'm not allowed to eat before I daven Shmona Esrei, it means I'm not allowed to eat before I do my mitzvah midaraisa of saying Kriya Shema every morning and every night. So that's what the Meiri writes in Kuf Tes Vav Amud Beis and Bab Metzia. Very fascinating Meiri. Okay, so this is the background of the Isser of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Michshol. This is the Chinuch's approach to why we don't get Malkus, because it's a Lav She'ein Bo Maisa. And now we spoke about the Rambam's approach why we don't get Malkus, because it's a Lav Shevachlalos. So now let's go a little bit further. Let's see what are the circumstances when the Isser Lifnei Iver applies, and when are the circumstances when the Isser Lifnei Iver would not apply. So the sugi really starts on Avodah Zarah Daf Beis. The core of the sugi of Lifnei Iver is the first parak in Avodah Zarah, which talks as follows. This is number 3 in the Mar Makomos. The Mishnah tells us as follows. Daf Beis Amud Aleph Lifnei Eideyem Shal Avodas Kol Chamet. Eideyem means when we have the holidays of the non-Jews. So before the holidays of the non-Jews, Gimel Yamim, for 3 days prior to their celebration, for their holiday, Aser Lasis V'Lasis Imayim. I am not allowed to do any sort of business transactions with the non-Jews 3 days prior to their holiday. Why not? Strange Mishnah. Says the Gemara, Daf Vav Amud Aleph, and we have it right here on the sheet. Ibayilahu, the Gemara has a question. What's the reason why I'm not allowed to do business with a goy 3 days before his holiday? Is it Mishum Harvacha? O Mishum, Dilma Mishum, V'lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Michshol? Is it because I don't want him to get money from the transaction and then use it for his Avodah Zarah? He's obviously going to bring whatever a carbon means to him, but he's going to bring some sort of sacrifice, some sort of offering. He's going to pay money on the holiday to offer something to his God. So is the reason why I'm not allowed to do business with him because then he's going to have extra money to go and sacrifice to his God? Or is it Mishum Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Michshol? Says the Gemara L'may Nafka Mina, De'is Lei Behema L'Didei. The difference would be if the non-Jew already has an animal on his own before I did any business with him. E Amrit Mishum Harvacha. If you're going to say the reason why I'm not allowed to do business with the non-Jew is because he's going to get extra money, how come a Rabach Lei? Over here I'm still getting him extra money and therefore it would not be allowed. Yamit Mishum Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol Ha Islei L'Didei. If the problem over here is I may not do business 3 days prior to the holiday because it's Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol, that would not pose a problem here because he already has an animal on his own. So ask the Gemara, Michi Islei, just because he owns an animal on his own, Lo Aver Mishum Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol, just because the non-Jew has an animal on his own, if I sell him one, I'm not over on the Isser Lifnei Iver? Why not? I'm still facilitating an Isser. If he finds my animal more worthy for his God, for his sacrifice, so I'm still facilitating an Isser. What's the difference that he might have one before he does the business with me? That's the Gemara's question. V'hatanya. The Gemara asks, Amar Rav Nassim, Minayin shlo yoshet adam kos yayin l'nazir ve'ever menachay l'bnei noach. How do I know I'm not allowed to give a kos yayin the nazir? I'm not allowed to give a cup of wine to a nazir who may not drink wine. The Eiver Menachai Lebnei Noach, or we know non-Jews, they don't have to do shechita. However, Eiver Menachai is one of the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. They may not eat meat before it is killed, before the animal is killed. How do I know I'm not allowed to facilitate that Isser to them? Tamalomar v'lifnei Iver lo sitei michshol. I'm not allowed to pass any sort of Isser to the non-Jew, or to the nazir for that matter. The Gemara asks, if I don't pass the cup of wine to this non-Jew, to this nazir, or if I don't pass the Isser, Eiver Menachai, to the non-Jew, he's going to do it without me. He'll just reach over and take the cup of wine on his own. He'll reach over and take the steak off the table on his own. So why am I over on the Isser Lifnei Iver? If he has it on his own, I thought the Gemara just said you're not. So the Gemara answers as follows. What we're talking about over here is a situation where the cup of wine is on the other side of the river. So I'm on this side of the river. The Nazir is on that side of the river. The Nazir on his own cannot stick his hand over to this side and actually get the cup of wine. He's not able to do that. It's too far for him to reach. So therefore he needs me to pass it halfway and then he'll take it the rest of the way. So says the Gemara, the only time I'm over on the Isser Lifnei Iver is when it's betray Iver Dinahara, when it's on two different sides of a river, so to speak, and I am facilitating the Isser that he would not have been able to do on his own. However, if I would have been doing something which is chalev or dinar. Let's say the cup of wine is right here on the table, and he could just as easily stick his hand and get it, and instead I just push it over to him. I bring it a little bit closer, but he could have gotten it on his own. It sounds from the Gemara that there's no iser of lifnei iver in such a case at all. And the Menchas Chinuch in Mitzvah Reish Lamed Beis points out that it's very strange when you look in the Rambam and in the Sefer HaChinuch, they both leave out this Gemara's distinction. They don't differentiate between Chad Iver Dinahara and Treyed Iver Dinahara. They seem to say that regardless of the circumstances, as long as I facilitate an Isser to someone, doesn't matter if he could have done it on his own or he could have done it only with me, I'm over on the Isser of the Lifnei Iver L'Sitin Nachshon. It's very strange that the Rambam and the Chinuch do not differentiate between a case where the person could not have done it on his own and a case where he would have been able to do it on his own. And the Menchas Chinuch points this out in Mitzvah Reish Lamed Beis that it's very strange. The Malam of the Ho writes in his Tshuva that you have to say that obviously the Rambam and the Chinuch feel that there is no reason to split, to differentiate at all. They don't hold like our Gemara. However, most of the Achronim, the Steichamid quotes that most of the Achronim disagree, and they feel even though the Rambam didn't quote it, obviously the Rambam agrees to this, that the only time there's an Isser lifnei iver midaraisa is when the person cannot have done the Isser on his own, and I am facilitating the Isser on his behalf. But if it's something that the person could have actually violated on his own, and I'm just making it a little bit easier for him, so then there's no Isser midaraisa of lifnei iver lo sitei michshol. The Ran over there points out, and Tosis and Shabbos Daf Gimel writes the same thing, Gimel on the base. Tosis and the Ran both write that this is only with regard to the Isser de'oraisa of lifnei iver. However, there's still an added Isser midrabanan of Messiah l'dvar avera. So therefore, says the Ramban, if I'm just pushing this cup of wine a little bit closer to the Nazir, even though he could have just as easily stretched his hand out and gotten it on his own, I'm still over on the Isser midrabanan of Messiah l'dei over aver. That's what he points out. Now, if we look at the number 4 on the Mar Makomos, so we'll see a very interesting discussion, which is found in the Mardukhai in the first parak in Avodah Zarah, where all the sugyas are discussed of Lifnei Iver. Very interesting discussion about giving priests old siddurim, or old prayer books, that we know they're going to end up using. Let's see. Uva Mardukhai Kaza. The Mardukhai writes as follows. Gan mikan mochiach bahag de mutter lahalvosam bezman hazeh, afal pisha heinosnim min amoz tekruves avodas kachavim l'shamish biyom chagam. What does it mean? I'm allowed to lend this non-Jew money, even though I know he's going to take part of the money and use it for his sacrificing to Avodah Zarah. Why? Why is that permitted? The Gemara just said, I'm not allowed to do it 3 days before the non-Jewish holiday. Says the Mardukhai, Lefisha ein nosnin l'shamish kol kach, shelo yuchlu limtso osa davar muat, lilvos me'ov de kachav macherim, afinu lo hayinu malvin lohem. What does that mean? I'm not lending him $1 million at a time. He comes to me, he says, can I borrow $100? I want to buy some sacrifice for my Avodah Zarah. So $100 loan he could have gotten from any neighbor of his. Happens to be, I was the first person he passed by on the street, so he asked me, so I gave it to him. So says the Mardukhai, in that type of case, where he could have easily gotten it from anyone else, he didn't have to come to me specifically, he could have easily done it in many other ways. So he says, therefore, in such a case, I would be allowed to lend him the money. Why? Because it was so easy for him to do the Aveira without me. So therefore, it's not called a Lifnei Iver L'Sitei Michshol. And if we look in the Me'iri, I wrote it, and we have it on the sheet also, right after this, the Me'iri writes over there, Mutter lanu limchar lo, sharei ein ha-michshol bal b'shalanu me'ata. Mutter lanu limchar davar aser lo, afapi shelo kala achila. We're allowed to sell him something, even though he's going to buy something that he's not allowed to eat. Hol v'hu motza liknos b'zula senu. Since he could go and buy it without us. He doesn't need my store to buy this davar aser for himself. He could buy it somewhere else without me. So therefore, it's not called a lifnei iver lo sitein michshol midaraisa, because he would have easily been able to do the aveira in some other fashion. Umikal makom, says the Me'iri, aser litenlo. I'm not allowed to give it to him for free, because then I'm offering him something which he couldn't have gotten without me. Okay. So then, you look a little further, and we see that the Ramah writes this in Kufnon Aleph Sif Aleph as well, that if there were other ways that the person could have bought this item, for example, I have a store that sells Eiver Menachai, let's say. And I have a big sign in the store, Jewish people may not enter. Okay, so now the question is, a non-Jew is also not allowed to eat Eiver Menachai. So what's the halacha? Am I allowed to run this business or not? I know that a non-Jew is, I'm going to be tripping up a non-Jew to do an Aveira. So am I allowed to run this business or not? So say the Rishonim, and that's what the Rama writes in Simon Kufnon Aleph, that since down the block there's another Avram and Achai store, and the non-Jew could just as easily go down the block and buy from that other store, so there's no problem. I may as well sell it to him as well. Why shouldn't I make money on it? Why should he have to go to the other store? Let him come to me? So that's fine. That's what the Rama writes. However, the Bir Agra strongly disagrees there in Simon Kufnon Aleph in Yerodea, which is all about Lifnei Iver, Lo Sitei Michshol. And he says, no, the only time I'm allowed to give this Avram and Achai to the non-Jew is if he already has Avram and Achai in his possession. That's when I'm allowed to give him an extra piece of Avram and Achai. However, if the only way he was going to have it was by buying from either my store or someone else's store, says the Bir Agra, that's terrible. I'm facilitating that Isser. He doesn't already have it in his property and he would have done the Avera anyway. He had to go to a store to buy it. So says the Bir Agra that a person would not be allowed to run a store of Avram and Achai, even though there's a store next door or down the block. I still would not be allowed to do that because I am still facilitating the Isser to this non-Jew. And the Chazon Ish writes this as well, like the Bir Agra. This is a very, very famous Bir Agra that disagrees with the Rama. It's also Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos. And this is a discussion whether I am allowed to open a store that sells something that's going to be usher to this and this person, even though he could have bought it in another store down the block. The Rama is Mekel, and the Bir Agra is Machmir. We find also an interesting discussion. This is very fascinating. The Gemara says in Chagiga Daf Yud Gimel that I'm not allowed to teach a non-Jew Torah. Says the Gemara, how do I know? Because it says, Mishpatim Bal Yudon. The Mishpatim, the laws of the Torah, Bal Yudom, it's not for them to know, it's for us. And therefore, I'm not allowed to teach them as an Issa D'Araisa to teach a non-Jew Torah. That's what the Gemara says. The Menchas Chinuch points out that the Rambam holds that this is not an Issa D'Araisa, it's only an Issa D'Rabbanan. The Gemara never meant it as an Issa D'Araisa, because Mishpatim Bal Yudom is just an Asmachta from Tanakh. Okay. So, Tosis there asks a very, very, very famous Kashan, Chagiga Daf Yud Gimel, that everyone quotes and everyone talks about all the time. Tosis asks a question. Why does the Gemara have to come up with a whole new reason why Mishpatim Ayidom? The reason I'm not allowed to teach a non-Jew Torah is because this pasuk Mishpatim Ayidom. I have a different reason why you're not allowed to do it. Ask Tosfos, because we know that the Gemara says in Sanhedrin Daf Nun Tes, Akum Shalom Torah Chayiv Misa. The Gemara tells us that a non-Jew who goes ahead and proactively involves himself in learning Torah, he is Chayiv Misa. So ask Tosfos, then if I would go ahead and teach him, so that's Lifnei Iver. I'm setting him up to do something he's not allowed to do. So why did the Gemara have to come up with a new reason why I'm not allowed to teach a non-Jew Torah? Because Mishpatim Al Yidom. Why don't you say the reason why I'm not allowed to teach him Torah is because Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Michshol? That's Tosfos' question. So Tosfos gives a very simple answer, and he says that over here, what are we talking about? Where there's another non-Jew who knows the Torah very well, he's a Baki in Shas, and he could have gone to his non-Jewish neighbor to teach him Torah. So, he could have done the Isser anyway, and instead he chose to come to me. So therefore, in that type of case, there is no Isser Lifnei Iver. And that's why the Gemara had to come out to a new reason why I'm not allowed to teach him Torah, because Mishpatim Al Yudom. That's the Chiddush of Tosfos. So, the Mishnah Lamelech has a famous diuk, which all the Achronim quote from the Mishnah Lamelech, that why does Tosfos say that over here we're talking about a case where he could have gone to another non-Jew to teach him Torah? How many non-Jews is he going to find to teach him Torah? Why didn't Tosfos say, here we're talking about a case where he could have gone down the block, there's some other Jewish guy who was looking to make money, and he would have taught him? That's the Mishnah Melech's deal. Why does Tosfos say that over here we're talking about a case where the Isser could have easily been violated in another way by what? By a non-Jew teaching this non-Jew Torah. Why doesn't he say it could have been violated by another Jew teaching this Jew Torah? So therefore, says the Mishnah Melech, it would seem from Tosfos that in a case where the only other way that this Isser can be done is through another Jew, that's not a reason why I would be putter from the Isser of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Michshol. That's what the Mishnah Lamelech points out. The only time I get myself out of this problem of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Michshol is in a case where the Isser could have been facilitated by a non-Jew. But if the Isser could have been facilitated by either Jew A, Reuven, or Shimon, so in that case, a person still violates the Isser of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Michshol. So these are some of the preliminary discussions. Maybe next week, I guess, maybe we'll get a little bit more into the details of Lifnei Iver L'Sita Michshal, and when it applies, when it doesn't apply. There's a beautiful tshuva from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, which we'll speak about next week maybe, about a case where there were non-religious donors who came to Yeshiva Kol Torah. They were giving a lot of money, there was some dedication there, and he gave them a drink of water, I think, and he put it on the table in front of them, and they each took a drink. So all the Talmidim asked him after, oh, how are you allowed to feed them this water? What do you mean? You know you're facilitating an Isser because they're going to drink without making a bracha. So how are you allowed to do that? The Gemara says in brachas, kol nanam nalam azabalai bracha kilumal. If a person eats anything without making a bracha, he's doing a tarbal aver. So they asked Rav Shlomo Zalman, how was he allowed to do that? So he wrote a whole tshuva in the Shalos Tshuvas, Mincha Shlomo Chelek Gimel, that he didn't feel this was a problem, and we'll go through the cheshbon next week, and this really gets into other issues. May a person make certain types of cheshbonos when it comes to Lifnei Iver? Am I allowed to do X in order that the person shouldn't violate Y? I'm going to save him from doing something worse by facilitating something that's not as bad. So that's part of the discussion that Rav Shlomo Zalman has in that tshuva, and that's part of maybe the details that we'll get into a little more next week. If we just look on the other side of the paper, just a couple of minutes about the Parsha, I saw a really, really beautiful Vart that my father writes over in Nefesh HaRav from Rav Soloveitchik. Last week I photocopied something from the Panami office and someone complained, and we all know the Panami office is, we have to hear new things that, you know, we're not going to hear otherwise. So here we are, back to Vart from Soloveitchik, which I guess some people wouldn't have known otherwise. So the Vart goes as follows. Says Rashi, Yashab Ksiv. It says that Avram Avinu was sitting down. Bikesh Lamod, the famous Chazal, Avram Avinu wanted to stand up. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shev Vani Amod. You should sit down, you stay where you are, I'll stand up. Va'ata Simon Levanecha, and this will be a simon to your children, that what? Sha'asan Ani Le'siyate Va'adas Adayanim, Behem Yoshu. That one day there's going to be a time when we're going to have Bati Dinim all over Klal Yisrael, and they are going to be sitting down, the Dayanim are going to sit in front of the people who come for a Din Torah, and Hashem is going to be standing on top of the Din Torah very carefully. That's what the Gemara says in Sanhedrin. A Dayan should always feel as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is standing right over him when he's doing a Din Torah, because that's what it says, Elokim Nitzah Ba'daskel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually hangs around when a Din Torah is going on. So, Rav Soloveitchik asked a very simple question. Tzarech Bir Kamanas HaMedrash Bazeh. What in the world is the understanding of this medrash? What does it have to do? Avraham Avinu is sitting, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is standing. That has any significance to a Din Torah, which is going to be thousands of years later, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be standing and the Dayanim are going to be sitting? What does one have to do with the other? What does this have to do with the Din Torah, the fact that Avraham Avinu is sitting outside his house waiting for some guests to come? So Rav Soloveitchik explained with a beautiful explanation, and he said, Avraham Avinu haya az ba'osa mayim b'chinas dayim. Avraham Avinu, in a certain aspect, was considered like a dayan in that case. He was like a judge to everyone else. Why? Uve'inan dayanim b'yeshiva. And the dayanim always have to sit. Al'ezeinin haya Avraham Avinu dam ba'osa shah. What was he being a dayan about? What was happening? V'nir levar. So Rav Soloveitchik explained based on the Gemara in Yuma Lamed Hey, Tana Rabbanim. Ani v'ashir, famous Gemara. The Gemara says, you have a rich man and a poor man come to Shemayim, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked him a question, why weren't you involved in studying Torah? So the poor man says, I'm so busy going house to house, knocking on the doors, trying to make money, trying to support my family. What was I supposed to do? I didn't have time. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, were you any poorer than Hillel? Is it possible that you had less money than Hillel? And the Gemara tells us that Hillel used to give every last penny he had. Some pennies he would give to support his family, and the rest of the pennies he would keep to try to get into the Beis Medrash to learn. It was an entrance fee. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, it didn't stop Hillel from learning, and you weren't poorer than him. Sorry, no excuses. Then it says, the rich man comes in, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks him, why weren't you involved in learning Torah? So he says, well, I was busy taking care of my real estate the whole time. I was busy taking care of all my businesses. I was busy taking care of all the meetings I had to go to. I couldn't learn. I didn't have any time. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, were you any more wealthy than Rabbi Elazar ben Charsim, who was one of the Heilige Tanaim, who had so much money and he was so wealthy, yet he still found the time to learn? Sorry, no excuses. And the Gemara goes on, and it says that a beautiful looking person came in, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, why weren't you learning Torah? And he says, I was busy with my beauty, and you gave me so much talent, and whatever. So for each person, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has an answer. So the Gemara's maskana is that it comes out that Hillel Mechayev es Haniyim. It turns out that any poor man who wants to show up and say that he had an excuse, Hillel is going to stand there in front of his face and say, sorry, no excuses. And any rich man that shows up to Shemayim and thinks he has an excuse, Rabbi Elazar ben Charsim is going to stand in his face and say, sorry, no excuses. So over here also, when we look in the second paragraph here, on the first line, Hine bevada yadua she'ena kadosh baruch hu ba betrunya im briyosav. Ve'ilu haya be'emes min ha'nimna l'kayim es ha'torah be'ezem matzavim. If there was a situation where a person would not be able to actually fulfill any sort of mitzvah, Hare bevadai hayinu omrim da'onos rachmona patrit. Hashem understands. He would have excused us from that mitzvah and said, okay, you couldn't do it. You were too poor. And actually the circumstances were such that you couldn't do such and such a mitzvah. You're excused. Obviously that would be the case. However, HaKadosh Baruch Hu never puts us in that situation. And if he does, then we're actually excused. Achim limroz gadol avonav hayabil chalto shal hil anyo. If, even though Hillel was so poor, he was still able to kaim es HaTorah, v'limroz gadol ashro, and even though Rabbi Elazar ben Charsim was so rich, he was still able to kaim es HaTorah, harei zeh mora, that shows us shahaya efsher af l'shar ha'aniyim u'l'shar ha'ashirim lasos kein. From the fact that Hillel was able to do it, proved to all the other poor people from then and for all of history that they would be able to do it as well. And therefore he says that this is exactly what was going on. If we look at the last paragraph, this is exactly what was going on with Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu, so to speak, was a dayan in this case. Why? He was passing judgment on Sodom. Why? Because all the people in Sodom, the residents said, our whole neighborhood is terrible people. Our whole neighborhood is terrible. Midos, what are we supposed to do? It's not our fault that we don't do Achnas Sarachim. It's not our fault that we treat people so terribly. It's not our fault that we don't help anyone out. What are we supposed to do? This is the surroundings we're in. This is what we were born in. This is our society. Came Avraham Avinu and he said, I live right down the block. There are no excuses. He was just like Hillel, who stands in the face of the Ani when he comes to Shemayim. He was just like Rabbi Elazar ben Charsim, who stands in the face of all the wealthy people who come to Shemayim and say, I'm sorry. That's not an excuse. So Avraham Avinu said as well, the society is not an excuse. I live in the same neighborhood. I live down the block. Yet, I didn't fall for this. I'm sitting outside of my tent ready to do Achnas HaSarachim. I'm ready to help others and I'm ready to spread Taras Hashem to others. So therefore, the significance of a dayan was that really Avraham Avinu, so to speak, was serving as a little bit of a dayan here on the people of Sodom. And he was really teaching them that there really are very few excuses that a person can have in many different areas. Sodom, the people thought, they really have a very valid excuse. They weren't at a level where they were able to go against the society. They weren't able to be so strong and be so passionate about their care for the mitzvahs when no one around them was. Yet Avraham Avinu showed them that a person sometimes has to break out of that shell, that outer lining that he finds himself in, and he has to really find the inner meaning in himself to realize what's most important in life. Maybe we'll continue next week with some more aspects of the faith.